This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Is your beautiful cat, who you love, also getting on your nerves, urinating in the living room, or leaving deep teeth marks in your arm? My guest Roger Tabor can help explain why. He's a naturalist and biologist who's written books about pet cats, street cats, and the history of domesticated cats. His latest book is called Understanding Cats, Their History, Nature, and Behavior, published by Reader's Digest. He's also written and hosted two BBC series about cats. He lives in Essex, England. I asked Roger Tabor about training cats. You don't get cats to fetch, sit, and heel on command like dogs. Tabor says the explanation can be found in the evolutionary history of cats and dogs.
You see, we are an animal that fits, really, in our behaviour terms, partway between a cat and a dog in the way we relate to a lot of things. We are quite like a dog in many ways. We're quite hierarchical. And dogs form groups where they go out and hunt as a group in the same way as their wolf ancestors. Therefore, it matters that when you come to the kill, you've sorted out who's top dog, second dog and third dog, and you've sorted that out by aggression before. And that means that you've got to have a lot of communication going on between the dog family as individuals, and they've got to know who's top and who's second. Now, that means dogs are easy to train because you are either the top dog or, heaven help you, the dogs are all over you and they bully you around. So anybody who's got any sense at all trains their dog and acts really as an alpha male wolf towards their small wolf pack of their dog. You can't do that with cats because the whole evolution of the cat and the dog is quite different. Dogs come and wolves come from this open landscape where there was prey forming groups from which they could escape from wolves, and the wolves form groups so as they could go after the prey. So it's all about vision, it's about open landscape, and it's hunting as a group. Cats hunt historically in much more enclosed landscapes, wooded landscapes. That's why the tiger hunts by stealth, that's why a tabby hunts by stealth, because it doesn't work to be as a group trying to hunt. Imagine, Terry, you and I and a few other people were running through dense woodland and we'd be trying to hunt after something. We'd be falling over everything. It just would not work. So woodland hunting is about stealth. Now, if you're hunting by stealth, then hierarchy is irrelevant. What do you do? Tell yourself what to do? I mean, it's just not on. So cats as a unit are the unit and they have to work things out by themselves. Dogs as a unit are the pack. And they cooperate. That's why they're much more amenable to being told what to do. Cats, when you tell them what to do, look at us rather blankly and think, oh, what on earth are they on about? And because they, you know, there's no reason why they should do it for us. They go off and do what they want to do. So there is a real difference through their evolution as to the mindset. Unfortunately, we've been rather simplistic about this because we say about IQ tests up until relatively recently, oh, dogs do very well, they must be brighter than cats. Well, of course, it's a nonsense. The evolution, where they've come from, is quite different. So we really shouldn't expect to be able to train cats in the same way. And if you understand cats, you wouldn't.
Now, nobody really expects to be able to train a cat to, you know, like fetch your shoes or, you know, do the little tricks that dogs do and things like that. On the other hand, the frustration is if you have a cat who has behavior problems, it's hard to train a cat to get rid of those problems. Can I give you a couple of examples? Maybe you can give us some advice about how to handle this. Say you have a cat who is becoming a little aggressive toward the people in the house and biting, not biting playfully, but biting hard.
Yeah, you say in terms, again, Terry, of training. And in a way, it's showing how, because you're not alone in saying that. Many, many people use that as a word. The only reason I'm picking up on it is because it again shows our anthropomorphic, our human way of looking at things. Mm-hmm. We're trying to say that we should train these animals out of something. Whereas really what's happening with behaviour problems is we ought to look what's going on. If you go back 20 years, 25 years, in the US, exactly the same as in the UK, there were very few behaviour problems in the way that we have now huge numbers of behaviour problems. I mean, they are getting out of control in the States in the numbers.
Is that true that cats are misbehaving more than they used to?
Oh, absolutely, on a huge scale. Now, this is basically the problem. 20 years ago, 25 years ago in the States, virtually all cats were indoor-outdoor cats, as they now are still in Britain. Cat flaps were the sort of normal way. And there's still a lot of people in the States who do that. But what has happened is there's been a watershed of our approach as to how we relate to the animal. Now, whether it's we've become fearful of the outside world or what, you know, that's a matter of speculation. But certainly what we do, we keep now cats inside. What we do say is, well, we're frightened of cats getting killed by cars. And of course, if you're in the middle of Manhattan, nobody in their right mind would drop a cat out of a high rise into the middle of the traffic. Of course you wouldn't. But let me tell you a little story today. I was in Maine, 5 miles from the nearest road, and it was just up this dirt track, and I was talking to a family who were keeping their cat confined, and they had problems. And I was asking them why they were keeping them confined, and the guy said to me, oh, Roger, you would not believe the traffic we have around here. And I thought to myself, what planet are you on? Now, this is what's happened. By trapping, by confining cats, for very good reasons, you know, there are genuine fears of accidents in some areas, but the other big fear is, of course, health problems, that cats will get diseases. But if you go back 20, 25 years, we had cats in the States indoor, outdoors, massively all over. They were not dying like flies. There were veterinarians then. There are veterinarians now. We talk as if there were, as if veterinarians didn't count, as if there were no preventative shots. And it's crazy. What we've done, we've traded off the freedom of the cat for a certainty of behaviour problems like aggression, by urinating, by clawing the drapes. All of these things come together because the animals are under stress.
Yeah, no, so what's the connection between keeping a cat indoors and the kind of behaviour problems that you're talking about, and, you know, clawing the curtains, biting the people?
It all comes down basically to one thing. If you asked your cat, mm-hmm. would you like another? Because the other thing we've done is not just have our cats confined. We've ended up shooing more and more cats into households. If you go back these same 20, 25 years, multi-cat households were unusual. You go to any city in the States, there would be 3% tops. Now, 30%. Now, that's a big shift. Now, what we're doing is, by confining a cat in an apartment to start with, we are deciding what's its territorial area, not the cat. And when you start shoving more cats inside that same area, what we're doing is shrinking down that cat's area. Now, sure, we might be doing it for good reasons, but ask the cat and it'll say no thank you. And it is saying no thank you right across the United States very loudly, because that's why we're getting the urination. That's why we're getting the aggression. That's why we're getting the clawing the drapes. Not because the cats are cross with us, not because they're being awful, not because they've got some bad habit. It's because they're under stress. Now, how stress works is, if you go back to the normal indoor-outdoor situation, when you've got one cat and there's a new cat on the block next door, and where the two areas of their territories touch and the new cat on the block is trying to muscle in a bit more, it's not that they start urinating there specifically. It's not that they start spraying there specifically. It's not that they start fighting each other more specifically just out of bloody-mindedness. What's happening is that's the one area of the territory that the cat doesn't feel confident in. And it's all about confidence. When your cat feels confident, it doesn't do these things. When it's feeling an edge of its territory in the wild under threat, that's why it starts marking more there. Now, in our apartments, what happens, the more we cram other cats in, the more we reduce its area, it doesn't feel confident. It feels under stress. You only have to biochemically sample the hormone levels, and you will find what I'm saying is true. These are cats under stress, and therefore, if you reduce the stress, you reduce the problem.
Well, let me ask you this. Say you're living in an apartment building where, you know, an elevator apartment building where you can't very well have a little cat flap or open up the door and open up the window and let the cat, you know, roam free. Do you recommend that you not even have a cat because the cat's going to be under so much stress being confined to a relatively small apartment?
It's not for me to say. I think every owner has to look up their situation and act accordingly. What I would say is, one of the things I found from my travelling the world is that if you ever go to Amsterdam, they've got not high-rise in the American high-rise, but they've got apartment blocks there which go up to 5-6 stories in the 19th century part of Amsterdam. And you find that they have sort of long walk planks up to high-rise cat flaps on the outside of the buildings, and the cat cats go up and down these, and it works.
So that sounds really cool.
So there are ways around these things. The cats run up and down these like trees. So there are ways around it. But let's take the assumption that you're living in Manhattan, say, where you're in a high rise, mm-hmm. and it really is a problem. You know, mm-hmm. you can't let your cat out. Whether you think the cat should be there or not, it's down to you. But let's say you've decided you're going to have the cat.
Yeah.
And let's say you want to obviously reduce down the stress for your cat and also the inconvenience for you. Because if you go back through the years, cat keeping was easy. After all, that's why there are now more owned cats in the US than there are owned dogs. It's been quite simple. People have wanted an easier animal because they come back late from work and they don't know what time they're going to be there. And they don't want all this mess. They don't want this clawing. They don't want this aggression. So how you can do it is bring a breath of fresh air into your apartment. And one of the simplest ways of doing that, you know, these cat gyms, these little cat condos that cats can run up and down. I used to think these were crazy. You know, what is the advantage of having that in your house? But actually what they're doing is giving the cat somewhere to get up. The area, the territory that you are imposing on the cat isn't just the floor area of your apartment. If you can give shelf space that the cat can clamber up onto and is allowed to go up onto, that reduces both the territory risk, but it also at the same time gives the cat a great reduction in stress. Getting up is what a cat naturally, when an Alsatian or a German Shepherd chases after a cat, it gets up a tree to get out of the way and it feels safe. And if you can give your cat somewhere that it can get up and feel safe, then it will be much, much happier. I mean, after all, we are strange big animals lumbering around the place and people play music and they do all sorts of strange things. And at times, the cat, of course, will feel stressed. And if it's got its own retreat, its own bolt hole, then the stress levels really drop. So give the cat somewhere it can get up to. But half the time, of course, Terry, we say, get down off of there, get off that work surface, get down from the table, we're eating, we've got guests. So the cat, we have to explain very carefully, there are areas you can get up onto, and there are areas we prefer you don't.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up. I mean, most of us prefer that the cat not be on the table where we eat.
and cats can understand.
Well, how? I mean, say the cat.
Oh, there is a different.
Say the cat is in the habit of being on your kitchen table or your dining room table, and you don't think this is a really good idea. You know, one way of addressing the cat is to try to be really, you know, the aggressive disciplinarian and squirt a water gun at the cat, or you know, holler at it, or throw it off the table. Is that a good idea?
No, there's a difference between some of the things you're actually saying there, because some of them are good, some of them are bad, from the cat's point of view.
Yeah.
If you yell at your cat, remember that the cat ancestry is different from the dog ancestry. The dog, I mean, it's a terrible thing to say, but the dog you can be almost cruel to. But you can yell at them and say sort of terrible things to the dog, and the dog will cower, because it's playing the role of going into submissive postures. The strange thing is the cat does not have submissive postures in the same way that the dog does. Its whole response to aggression is quite different. It doesn't really know about being submissive because the way of its life isn't about being submissive. It's the sole animal against the world, if you like. So in that sense, not only could you have problems if you corner a cat and start being very aggressive to it, that genuinely could lead to problems, but at the same time, the cat doesn't understand it. It's not part of how it gets on. What you say if you dominate a dog is, I am the top dog. And even though the dog may not like it, it will accept it. If you do the same thing to the cat and say, I am the top cat, and start yelling at it, all that says to a cat is that you are not nice to be around, because top cats and second cats and so on are not really the same sort of thing in the cat world, unlike the dog world. So all you are doing is lessening down. If you bear in mind that cat society isn't about the currency of the hunt, the currency of the hunt keeps the dog world together, therefore they have to sort out their aggression beforehand and they all work together as a unit. The cat, because it hunts alone, doesn't need to come together for hunting. What it needs to come together is for other things like mating and rearing young, and
okay,
it's all the positive things. So you need to enforce the positive, not negative.
Okay, so I understand what you're saying there, but I still got this problem of a cat on the table. Well, I went off the table. Give me, what do I do?
Right, you don't yell at your cat, and you try to reinforce the bonding all of the rest of the time, and the one thing you do is act like God. If it's you as Terry standing there saying to your cat, get off that table, sure, the cat will get off, but you've weakened the bond.
Mm-hmm.
And it also thinks there's no good reason why I should get off the table because I like being up on tables. It's just Terry doesn't like me being on the table. So when Terry's about, I won't be on the table. But when Terry's not here, I'll be up on the table. And so that's fine. So you've got a double problem there. A, you're lessening the bond with your cat, and that increases the stress, that increases the problem that the cat will be aggressive to you, that it will spray, that it will do all of the things you don't want it to do. So what you want to do is increase the bond, be positive and friendly and affectionate with your cat, and it has to be the finger of God. You've either got to have something like a water pistol that the cat doesn't see. That's the critical thing. It has to come like a bolt out of the blue, so the cat never associates you with what's going on. You can use tiny little bean bags as well. I mean, really small ones. But and they're easy, because if you ever try carrying a water pistol around your pocket, it leaks, I tell you now. But a little bean bag, you can sort of lob at the cat. But in all of these things, it can go so disastrously wrong if you don't do it very carefully, because the cat thinks you're playing a game. And it just can go badly wrong. So be very, very careful how you go around it. But what you really need to do is to make sure that the cat, what's the best way, is to make sure that you encourage the cat to have an area that it is okay to be on. So whenever the cat wants to get up, it will automatically go to that. And if you use these cat condos where they have some sisal string so it can do its clawing, and you play, don't just plonk these things down in the corner of your room because the cat will just ignore them, but you go and play with the cat with a piece of string over it, and the cat will want to be there, and you'll find the cat will start queuing up there and wanting to play with you there. And so you're getting this bonding, and you're getting this reinforcement over an area which is correct to go, and so you don't have to really stress it so much in the other area.
My guest is naturalist and biologist Roger Tabor. His latest book about cats is called Understanding Cats. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. Back with Roger Tabor. He's a cat authority who has written and hosted two BBC programs on cats. His latest book is called Understanding Cats. Well, let's get back to the biting problem. Do you find a lot of people are complaining about that when they complain about cat behavior?
Yeah, and again, Terry, most people misunderstand rather than understand cats when it comes to biting, because a lot of the things that we think of as aggression is really rough play. And if you look at one of the problems that happens with confinement of cats is that the cats become bored. Mm-hmm. And that cats also don't have a release for a lot of their interests. What we're doing is not just reducing the area, we're reducing down the things they would normally expend their energy on, running around after birds, running around after falling leaves, all of that sort of thing. So one of the best things you can do is genuinely, again, the cat condo and the playing with a piece of string and all of that, a lot more play into your cat's life will actually reduce down a lot of the pent-up feelings that the cat will have, which then it sort of rationalizes itself as aggression towards you. But having said that, some of the things that we see as aggression, and for example, very often I talk to people about, they say, oh, I've got this aggressive cat. And then I say, oh, fine, how do you describe it? Oh, it's so schizophrenic. I'm sitting there with a cat on my lap and I'm stroking its back and it's all relaxed and we're watching the television. Everything is wonderful. And suddenly it starts biting the back of my hand and its back feet start kicking against my arm. And what is happening with my cat? And of course, it's very sensible what's happening with your cat. Your cat is suddenly scared. Because what's been going on is you've been stroking your cat and it's been getting into a very relaxed, quite a sexy state. Because when we are with cats and we are running our hands down their back, because you realise we stroke cats, whereas we pet dogs. I don't know if you've stopped to think about it. We don't really stroke dogs in the same continuous way. It's because cats have a silkier fur. So we're finding we're almost getting into it, like saying a mantra. We just keep doing it. But it's also quite a sort of sexy thing to do. We just keep going. And stroking is something actually we use only with our own sexual partners. If you think about it, you don't stroke children, you don't stroke grandmothers, it's always just with a sexual partner and at a pre-mating time. Now, that, strangely enough, is what's happening with the cat as well. The cat will suddenly start going up into a lordosis position. It goes down on its front legs, its rear end gets up. So a lot of the sort of things that are going on are all quite intimate. It's not that either of us are meaning sort of sexy things, it's just we're being affectionate. But our vocabulary is limited, so we're sort of saying, you know how you speak to a foreigner, you speak slowly and loudly. Well, it's that's what the cat and we are doing to each other. But this gets sort of sexier and sexier, and the cat is rolling around, and it does something then that it doesn't normally do even with other cats, again, unless it's in a pre-mating time. You know how when cats get together and the female is being quite flirty, she's coming into her estrus period and she's been calling, and so she's going around and she starts rolling on her back, and it really is quite sexy stuff. And that's what the cat's doing to us. Now, What we suddenly do, which breaks the spell, is we bring our hand up towards their tummy, and it sometimes goes across their face, and suddenly the cat is out of this reverie of it's just about to be mated, it's enjoying itself, it's quite happy and contented, and suddenly it's being threatened by the most aggressive cat imaginable. It's coming over its face, and it's because what happens when a cat is exposing its tummy, the only other time it does that is during a cat fight, but not just any cat fight, not just playing around slightly, but it's the most serious of serious cat fights, when male on male are rolling and rolling, and what they do is try to get each other with a sort of grip around each other's shoulders, facing onto each other, and they rake against each other's belly, and loads of fur comes out, and if they get a real kick in, one cat will fly over the other cat's shoulders, they'll crash to the ground, they'll reform, and they'll kick and kick and kick it. And that's what the cat thinks is suddenly going on. And so it's small wonder what it does is grip us round the wrist and start kicking with its heels. It's just defending itself. And then it realises, of course, oh, no, it's not. Now, the simplest way to stop that happening is to get into this, oh, no, it's not, stop. Because if you keep pulling your arm away from your cat, if you say, oh my God, what's going on? Get off me, cat! You're pulling and you're pulling, and that's just a fight. And so the cat carries on fighting. So the best thing to do is just suddenly stop. And it all suddenly that stops in the cat's mind, and it relaxes, and everything is calm again.
Roger Tabor, his latest book is called Understanding Cats. He'll be back with us in the second half of our show. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air. This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross, back with Roger Tabor. He's a naturalist and biologist who studied the behavior of pet cats and street cats. He's written and hosted two BBC programs on cats. His latest book is called Understanding Cats. A lot of us go to animal shelters to find new pets, but Tabor says the transition from a shelter to your home can be challenging for a kitten.
Put yourself into one of these little kittens' minds at a rescue shelter, okay? You've been there, you've been attached to your mother, and you've been attached to your littermates, and the people at the shelter haven't had enough time, because they're so overworked, to spend with you. They're changing the litter, they're sure they're bringing you in food and so on, but they really haven't had time because they haven't thought about they need to set it aside. And so you come through to these new people who take you away when you're weaned at about 7 or 8 weeks away to the new people, and that's just at the time you're beginning to learn about other animals as enemies. And so here you are, you're taken away, and we, you know, you've got children or whatever, you put them down, the little kitten with your children, and the kittens suddenly see these monsters from the planet Zarg coming over them, and they're saying, and you're getting all of this going on, and the kitten thinks, my God, what is all this? And it's been in a nice little nest, everything's been quiet, everything's been beautiful, and then it's suddenly thrown in this car, it's thumped all over the place, and then hell breaks out. Now, small wonder that some cats don't react to us quite as well as they could. Whereas if through this magical window in their early kittenhood, people at the cattery spent just a little bit of time, they don't have to spend much, just set a little bit of time aside when they go into the young kittens that are there and just put their hand down and play with the mother, allowing it with the little kittens, not taking them out of the nest, then this magical transformation is so profound that it's not just about people. You see, this isn't a special magic trick for people. It's habituation for littermates. But you can play games, and it's happened over the years. Occasionally, not just people have got in during this magic window. Rats have been allowed in. For some bizarre reason, a mother cat has allowed a rat in, or a rabbit in. So, and for the rest of those kittens' lives, they will play with those, not as if they're prey. And it's so specific that there are certain varieties of rats that a cat will play with as a littermate, even in adult life, but others it will kill.
So you're recommending that if you are getting a cat from a shelter to try to find a shelter where the kittens were born on the premises and the staff really loves the kittens and have been playing with them and habituating them to humans?
Habituation is the magic trick. What you need to do is to say to the shelter people right early on, that you will be wanting a cat, and you'll have to go along earlier to choose anyway, because it's not a sort of a sudden Dutch auction where they're all sold off at the last second. People, of course, go and put their bid in earlier than the cats can leave. And so right early on, when you're going around and there are some newborn kittens, say, oh, yes, I'd like that one, but I'm only going to be able to take them from here if they've been played with on a daily basis. Do you normally do that? Because it habituates the cats quite happily. And if the people are saying yes, then go for it. And I would ask you to think very seriously about this. I've got my couple of cats now that live with me particularly, and they are about 9 years old. But my previous cat, that was my own house cat, lived to just 2 weeks short of 25 years old. Now, I'm a fairly typical person in the Western world. I've been married, I'm now divorced, I now have a girlfriend and so on. And that's true for so many of us. We go through our human relationships now with a bigger turnover than possibly the lifetime relationship you may have with a cat.
Good point.
So it matters that you get this relationship right from the beginning. And that animal will probably be there because a lot of people like to have cats around for their children. So it makes them familiar with animals. And so, again, if you want the relationship with your children to be good, it matters that you choose one. Don't just go along and think, oh, I'm saving this cat. Sure, you can save it, but you can also make sure it lives happily with people.
You've made the point several times really strongly that cats need exercise, and it's great if you can let a cat out of the house. What do you think about walking a cat on a leash if you live in a kind of urban area where you can't just, let the cat roam free outside?
Walking cats on leash is something that you can't do as easily as walking a dog. Because you know the way that the dog will take the initiative and want to go forward. You can't really do that with a cat. Leashes with cats are very, very useful. Cats will initially fight them. They don't like having something that restrains them. So if you're going to get a cat used to a leash, first of all, get it used to the harness, gently habituate it to it over a period of some days, put it on for a little while, let the cat just walk around the apartment, don't take it anywhere, and then take it off. And then gradually just clip on the leash. And again, don't try and walk the cat anywhere. If you gradually introduce it like this, first of all, the cat is much more likely to take to it and is less likely to fight it. So when you do go outside, you won't have a cat that sort of wants to run off and suddenly all you've left with is an empty leash. But then when you do go out, of course, don't do it in areas that the cat's going to be frightened. You just should not think of doing it in traffic areas and things like that. Do it in quiet, peaceful areas, but where the cat is confident. Remember, what you are doing is fighting nature. You're taking a cat away from its territory, which is the home that it's built up, and you're putting it down, so it's going to be anxious. It's not like a dog that gains its confidence from us as its mobile pack and therefore is happy to walk with us. So sure, you can walk with a cat on the leash, but it's not a confident animal. But how you can increase its confidence is if you've got a local area, a bit of a park or a bit of a green area within your urban area, and that you go to it regularly with your cat will actually begin to develop, although it's devoid, separate from your apartment, it will like have a sort of secondary bit of territory, and it can gradually build up a confidence, and that's fine. My own cats, for example, will go walking with me out of their territory, following me in sort of bits of a long, narrow walk that just extends out of their territory, merely because I rattle my keys. Cats are very susceptible to high-frequency sounds, much more even than dogs, and they gain the assurance of knowing where I am and will bound after me. But I am in quite a rural area, so I wouldn't recommend you do that in an urban area.
One last question. Are you having any problems with your cats, or is everything really terrific? How's your relationship?
Very fair question. My relationship with Leroy, who's one of my cats, is great and always has been. He's a great laid-back cat. He's a rescue cat himself, came from South London. And he lives in my watermill home in the countryside and loves it. He's a great laid-back cat. In fact, his name Leroy, I didn't find him in the first instance. He was found by a Canadian friend who said he went around with a ghetto blaster and therefore just had to be so laid-back. He was Mr. Cool. And he is Mr. Cool. He catches absolutely everything. And he's a very relaxed cat. And that is one sort of cat. My other cat, Tabitha, again, loves me to bits and has a very good relationship with me. But she's a very clingy cat. And that is the other main type of cat pattern, if you like. And the reason for that is, again, for reasons that happened outside of my control. She was taken away from her mother earlier than she should have been, at about 6 weeks, before she was properly weaned. And as a result, she is much more focused on me than perhaps is good for her. So she's much more of a paddler on my chest, and she's much more of a scaredy cat. But nonetheless, she will sort of come up and sit on me and be much more dependent. And sure, I have a good relationship with both, but you can understand why there's the difference because of their upbringing.
Well, doesn't her clinginess boost your ego a little bit? She loves me so much.
Well, if that's really what you want with a cat, you know, there are ways of manipulating life to achieve what you want. Yeah, but in a way, it's she is clingy because she's not confident.
Right.
And because I'm a kindly person most of the time, I don't like an animal to be clingy because it's not confident. And so if an animal feels assured, then it's a happier animal. And if she'd have been just that bit longer with her mum, she'd have been that much happier with me, and all would have been much better. And again, she wasn't that much habituated during her kittenhood. So she's a bit more nervy than she should be. But yeah, she loves me to bits and she loves where she lives and she has a great life.
Well, I wish you a continued good relationships. And Roger Tabor, a real pleasure to talk with you. Thank you so much for your for talking with us about cats.
Terry, it's been a gas, as they say. I've really enjoyed myself.
Roger Tabor's latest book is called Understanding Cats.